ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्याज्ञनं जनाशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदतो सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षु विश्वाम्बरो द्वियाबरो जुगधर्मपालु वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारु हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्तकञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दवनेश्वरि विश्वभानुसुति देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय श्री श्री गोनिता जगन्नाथ बल सुभद्र श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय गौर भक्त वृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि सो एवरीवन स्पीक्स इंग्लिश ऑफ कोर्स and coming from Italy with translation, so I'm just asking in case it's super. So Dandavat to all of you, welcome, and thank you so much for coming today. And I'm very happy, first time in Belgium, first time having darshan of Radha Desh and the Radha Desh buses. So happy to be with all of you today. And hopefully whatever we can share today can be of some service to our teamwork, team project, since ultimately we are all in this together, trying to serve the common cause of divine love, as the Vedas said, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, which means there's only one family. The importance of seeing how we all begin belong to the same tree, with the root being Krishna, who says in the Gita, Aham Bija Pradapita, I'm the seed-giving father, and everything else comes from me. So I feel very happy to continue to meet, so to say, my extended family in the form of every single living entity, especially Vaishnavas. So,
can I sit over there? Because
yes, my please, giving advice. Please, like, please, 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 please.
Thank you.
You are more comfortable now.
I'm more
you are also more, and you, and also this is pretty good. Can you hear me now? Okay. So as both Dinadayal Prabhu and Anupam mentioned, they have invited or suggested, I recently, last year, published my second book called Radical Personalism. And as you can see, it's a long book. Hopefully nobody's intimidated by its size, but it has different topics, although one can just read any chapter separately and it makes sense. You don't need to go through the whole thing from beginning to end. So I was invited to share some thoughts in connection to what the book means and how that's related to Krishna consciousness, basically, right? Because in one sense, it's not different from that. In fact, radical personalism is one way that I like to refer to Krishna consciousness, to our tradition. But we are personalists, and we are personalists to the very root. The word radical comes from that, from the Latin radix, which means something that goes to it, to the root of things, to the core. So ultimately, we are personalists to the core, or we want to. That's our ideal. We are worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Srila Prabhupada will refer to Krishna. So that's pretty personal. Krishna is not the Godhead. He's not the Supreme Godhead. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's pretty personalized. So naturally, someone like him, to relate with someone who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, invites us to develop our own Supreme Personality. to personalize ourselves as much as we can. Many times we speak about impersonalism, and not generally very gently, and I understand the point of that. But sometimes also we may forget how we can be impersonal in our personalist tradition. And that's tricky, because it's easy to like identify the enemy outside, so to say, there comes the impersonalists. And that may be a big distraction of how the many ways we can also be impersonal in how we relate to Krishna, how we relate to others, how we relate to ourselves, even in depersonalized ways. Mm-hmm. So for me, radical personalism is a term to refer to how we can, at least for me, something that helps me to be reminded of what I'm supposed to do as a devotee of Krishna. To be a Gaudiya Vaishnava, to be a devotee, is not just to be affiliated with a particular brand, religion, institution, but it's a living thing inside of my heart. It's an ongoing, developing relationship, which is in constant unfolding. Krishna is very dynamic. Krishna is always evolving. Krishna is always growing. So he invites us to do the same in connection to him. Like Chaitanya Charitamrita describes, how at every moment, at every nanosecond, to be more specific, Krishna is becoming more and more beautiful. That really means the all-attractive. The all-attractive doesn't mean someone who is super beautiful, but that's it. But it's someone who becomes even more super beautiful the next second, and then the next second, and then the next second. We cannot probably not imagine something like that, but that's Krishna, someone who is beyond our wildest imagination. So Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Krishna is constantly evolving in his beauty, in his all-attractiveness. And the devotees of Krishna are always growing in their service disposition. The more beautiful Krishna becomes, the more loving the devotees become to serve that beauty. And Krishna receives the love of his devotees, and he becomes more beautiful because of the love he's receiving. And that in turn makes the devotees increase their love for him. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, and the two of them engage in a competition. One increases his beauty, the other increases their love. The two of them engage in a competition in which none of them accept defeat. So Krishna continues to grow more and more beautiful. The devotees continue to grow more and more loving. And in this way, the relationship develops. So that's pretty dynamic, right? It's pretty active. To relate to Krishna is not just... Krishna is not a concept. No, Krishna is not... As I like to say, Krishna is not our idea of Krishna. Because we can have an idea of God, or even an experience of Krishna. Of course, I hope we all have an experience of Krishna, not only an idea. But even our experience of Krishna is not all that Krishna is. No? So we should always remain open to know Krishna more, love Krishna more. And for me, that means one of the ways of defining radical personalism. How to go to the root of being a person, how to go to the root of God being a person, what it means that God is a person, what it means that God is the supreme personality of Godhead, how to relate with such a person, how can we develop our own personality, how can we even, as I will add, not only develop ourselves spiritually, of course, but also heal or integrate all the layers of our humanity in service to this our spiritual project. As a human being, I may need also to acquire physical, mental, emotional balance so I can engage in bhakti from a wholesome place. That's also will be part of the project. Srila Prabhupada will refer to that as sattva. No? Sattva guna. It's a way of be balanced in your humanity, so to say, no? Because as we will talk these days, to serve Krishna, to become a pure devotee, however we may like to put it, to become a saint, to attain Golok Vrindavan, you name it as you like. That implies also being fully divine, but also keeping our humanity in place, because the Lila of Krishna is Nara Lila, or human-like, Srila Prabhupada will define it. But human-like, as we all talk this day, human-like doesn't mean pseudo-human. It's not that Krishna is pseudo-human or half-human, a little bit inhuman. No, Krishna is fully human and fully divine at the same time. So integrating our humanity will be an important point in our bhakti project, as I like to call it. So these days we will be talking about that. We'll be talking about the importance of vulnerability in the spiritual path, the importance of transparency and honesty. We will be talking about how to relate to the material world and the material energy in a way that is healthy. No, I'm thinking about that maybe tomorrow, that we'll be celebrating Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sannyas Lila. Tomorrow it is. So he's renouncing the world. So what does it mean to be a renunciant? No, I myself have been a sannyasi for the last 15 years. So what it means to be a renouncer, to what we are renouncing as Gaudiya Vaishnava. Tomorrow we will talk about that and another topic throughout these days that we'll be here. So, as I was saying, Radical Personalism for me is not so much a book. It's a book, but also it's a name for how to practice Gaudiya Vaishnavism, how to practice our tradition, Krishna consciousness, from the most personal way level possible. And how sometimes in the name, as I say, in the name of personalism, we can be promoting impersonalism. And we have to be very careful about that. Sometimes also in the name of Sadhu Sangha, I've seen sometimes, unfortunately, in the name of Sadhu Sangha, Asat Sangha is going on. For example, what Sadhu Sangha? We can define Sadhu Sangha in so many ways. Srila Rupa Goswami, for example, he describes three qualities of Sadhu Sangha. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says, Swajatiya Snigdasya Swatavara. For Sadhu Sangha to be Sadhu Sangha, there has to be Swajatiya Snigdasya and Swatavara. That has to happen with like-minded people. There has to be affection, snigdasya. It has to be affectionate, open, trust, promoting. And something higher has to be swatavara, something more elevated has to be flowing in that association. So the implication is, if in my sadhu sangha, there's no like-mindedness, there's no affection, there's nothing higher flowing, how much can I call that sadhu sangha? Right. Or when Rupa Goswami describes these six exchanges in Upadeshamrita, fourth verse, the six loving exchanges between the both Priti Lakshana, and he makes a point. It's a loving exchange. No? Giving gifts, receiving gifts, giving prasad, receiving prasad, revealing one's heart, receiving the heart of someone else. All that is Priti Lakshana, a symptom of love. So the point is, whenever I'm giving you a gift, it should be from a place of love. It shouldn't be a formality. Because also I can make a gift just in a diplomatic way. Okay, this is a gift for you. This is a gift. But Rupa Goswami said, Priti Lakshanam. It has to be with affection, with love. So again, the implication is, if those elements are not there, how much we can speak about Sadhu Sangha? And sometimes there can be Asat Sangha. Mahaprabhu will say, Asat Sangha Tyag E Vaishnavachar. The behavior of the Vaishnava is to avoid Asat Sangha. And sometimes we'll think, oh, Asat Sangha are all these only the Mayabadis and the atheists and the materialists. But also, Asat Sangha can come with Kantimala till we can be Asat Sangha. I'm not just pointing to someone else. No? I'm just saying, as Prabhupada would say, strict with ourselves and merciful with others. How much sadhu sangha I am for others, and how much I may be still sadhu sangha. The other day we were talking with a devotee, And he was like telling me like, "Oh Maharaj, where is Sadhu Sangha? I'm not finding Sadhu Sangha. And it sounded a little bit like demanding Sadhu Sangha. Where is my Sadhu Sangha? And what we came in the conversation was how much you are ready to become Sadhu Sangha for others. Because if not, it's just I want Sadhu Sangha, but how much we're willing to give ourselves, to embody all those principles also. So my point was, in the same way that a Sadhu Sangha can come in the disguise of Sadhu Sangha, impersonalism can come in the disguise of personalism. Impersonalism doesn't only mean to say everything is Brahman, let's merge into the undifferentiated absolute. That's a way of being impersonal. But another way of being impersonal is just basically not treating each other as persons, not treating each other as personally as we can, because there are degrees of that. How much of a person I am? We are all persons, we're individual beings, but how much are we engaged in developing our personality, our individuality? How much we are allowing everyone to develop that? I'm not questioning you, I'm just throwing these questions that for me are in my mind and in my heart, and that's an ongoing conversation, so to say. How much we're treating Krishna as a person. In my book, I remember I quote Saint Teresa of Avila. She's a Christian mystic, and she will say the main problem in prayer is that we pray as if God does not exist. Simply, it's as simple as that. When we one of the main problems in prayer, or you can put it in chanting, is intended, we chant as if Krishna is not there. We forget Krishna's presence, Krishna's existence, and we are just chanting and struggling, and it all depends on us, and it all falls on our shoulders. So that becomes a huge problem, because there's someone else there. And that someone else is everywhere. It's not that Krishna comes occasionally when you chant some nice rounds, but the rest of the day he really dislikes you. Right? Because you are very fallen, because you are not up to the ideal standard. And so Krishna is kind of horrified about your current situation. No, that's not Krishna. So we have to be careful not to project an idea of God that is our own bizarre imagination. Krishna is an ocean of mercy, and Krishna is present everywhere. There's not a place where Krishna is not. So when we chant, or when we pray sometimes, or when we live life, sometimes we forget that Krishna exists. Sometimes we forget that Krishna is there everywhere, accompanying us, loving us. But that's a form of impersonalism, I will argue. Because we are not treating God as a person. We even forget that he exists. You can even call it functional atheism. No? And in that precise moment, I'm an atheist. I behave as if God does not exist. So, and again, Krishna's everywhere. Sometimes we pray, Krishna, where are you? Krishna, where are you? Krishna, where are you? And probably the echo will say back, oh, I'm everywhere. Where are you? It's not so much that Krishna is absent, it's that we are absent to his presence. Because Krishna's everywhere. Like I always like to call, when Hiranyakashipu was wanting to kill Prahlad, and he tells him, as you know, I will kill you, where's your God that will protect you? I'm not seeing him anywhere. He's not anywhere. Where is he? Can you see him? And Prahlad is looking everywhere, and he's saying, where is he not? No, there's not a place I cannot find him. No, because he's everywhere. So if someone is omnipresent, like Krishna is, and we do not perceive him, I'd like to say that means that we are omni-absent. Because if you cannot perceive someone who is omnipresent, that speaks about your omni-absence, nothing else. So these are forms in which we can be impersonal. That's my point. Not to chastise anyone and to make anyone feel bad, just for us to realize that impersonalism can have different shades, and it's not that by just us having a Kanti Mala, Sikh or whatever, I'm totally free from that and beyond that, or because I officially subscribe to a personalistic philosophy, doesn't mean that I'm not visiting impersonalism here and there. Or as I say, sometimes in how we relate to one another, that's also important. That's one of the main arenas where we can show how much of a person we are, in how we treat each other, how much I treat you as a person, how much I allow you, your whole personality to flourish, to blossom, to be expressed. How much I'm willing to take all that, or how much I try to reduce the other person to almost an object, so it doesn't bother me that much. So I don't have to be that much challenged in developing my own personality. So those things are part, I will say, of our anartha nibriti. For me, anartha nibriti also is that. It's not just I chant or I practice bhakti and automatically all the anarthas go, but also I'm practicing with a willingness to be aware of the obstacles, of what's getting in the way of my present stage. That's also anartha nibriti, practicing with a willingness to be aware of what's getting in the way. And it's important to be aware of what's getting in the way. If you study all these books that describe the stages of bhakti, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kadambini, or even Bhaktivinoda Thakur's stages, Bhajan Rahasana, the moment they come to this describe an artha nibriti, that's generally the longest chapter of the whole book. Not to make us feel bad, just to know there are a few things that we need to consider in this stage. And that stage will last for some time, probably. No rush. Right? So yeah, there has to be a willingness to become aware of what's getting in the way. Many of the how questions sometimes we have, you know, at least personally, I don't know, for the last 25 years giving lectures, and many of my lectures are just like questions and answers. I just like to invite people to ask whatever they want. And probably half, at least half, probably more, 50% of the questions all start with how. And I'm not criticizing them, just saying it's a fact. Like how to do this, how to navigate this, how to work with this, how to deal with that, how. And many times the answers to how, no, and I'm not the person who will just reply, chant and be happy, no, although that's formula, but I said between chant and be happy, there is a parenthesis with 1 million pages of considerations. Because we can be pretty reductionistic and simplistic, and even if it's just and be happy, well, okay, what does it mean to chant? Chanting is a whole lifestyle. Okay, that's another conversation. I'm being tempted to go in that direction. Two words about that, and I return to my main point, if you allow me. Because, of course, chanting is the center. It's at the center of our life as Vaishnavas. So important. But chanting is not limited to chanting. Because chanting means I'm chanting the name of Krishna. So what's the name of Krishna? The name of Krishna is Krishna. The name of Krishna is the person Krishna. Abhinatvam namanamino. Between the name and the named, there is no difference. So chanting the name of Krishna means relating to the person Krishna. Or more specifically, developing my relationship with Krishna. Do we agree? Just asking. I don't want just to be here imposing anything. I didn't come here like as a sannyasi. I didn't bring my danda. You have to accept what I'm saying. I'm not that guy. So chanting the name of Krishna is another way of saying developing my relationship with Krishna. Now, when we say developing my relationship with Krishna, Krishna is not an isolated person, but everything that exists is connected to Krishna. He's Mukhya Sambandha in Sanskrit, which means he with whom everything has its primary relationship. everything is revolving around Krishna, the common center for everything. Everything exists in relationship with Krishna. Nothing exists as an isolated reality. It's not that Krishna is here and there is someone else here. It has nothing to do with Krishna. It's not possible. Every atom, every aspect of existence is related to Krishna. So when I say chanting is developing my relationship with Krishna, yes. But what's Krishna? No. Krishna is Krishna plus everything in connection to Krishna that doesn't exist separated from him. So ultimately, chanting the name of Krishna means learning to relate to everything. So it's not limited to the moment I'm chanting, but to how I conduct myself at every moment. Srila Jiva Goswami makes this point with this famous verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Vanyavilasita sunyam jnana karmadhyana vritam anupulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. The definition of uttam bhakti according to Rupa Goswami. And Jiva Goswami comments, the word Krishna in this verse means Krishna is the Vishaya Lambana, or the perfect object of love. But he says, but that's a narrow definition. He says, a broader definition is the perfect object of love is Krishna and everything in relationship with Krishna. And then, of course, comes the question, so what's in relationship with Krishna? Everything. So that's the tricky part. We subscribe for love in relationship with Krishna, and then we realize, oh my gosh, that implies learning to relate lovingly with everything and everyone, because nothing exists separated from Krishna. The very idea of seeing things separated is the source of all problems. Separateness, dualism. So that's why the scriptures are saying the Kanishta Bhakta, the devotee who is more like a neophyte, let's put it that way, without stigmatizing being a neophyte. No, there's place for being a neophyte, and it's glorious in its own way. If you are in neophyte in bhakti, you are in bhakti. Jai. There's reason to celebrate. But the neophyte still thinks in terms of, okay, Krishna and me. Krishna's in the altar, and I worship Krishna. I love Krishna in the altar, but the altar closes, Krishna disappears. And I'm only loving what's behind the curtain. When the curtain opens, Krishna love you. Curtain closed, I don't know how to relate with everyone else. Something like that. That's Kanishta Adhikari, which means, again, I love Krishna, but I'm not extending that love to everything else still. And because of that, I'm a neophyte. When I'm more mature, like in Madhyam Bhakta, I learn to relate to Krishna, to the Vaishna, to the ignorant people, to the envious, as Rupa Goswami will say, in different ways. But I'm honoring all of them in different ways, honoring Krishna's presence in every heart. So I'm extending God's presence beyond the altar. And then the uttam vision, the highest vision is Krishna's everywhere. No. Everywhere. Not only in every person, even every atom. How does it look? I don't know. I'm not there yet, to be honest. But that's what the scriptures say, Brahma Samhita. Krishna says, I'm in every atom. So every atom is hosting the presence of God. So ultimately, we are to chanting Hare Krishna. That was my point. Chant and be happy. Okay, yes, chant and be happy. What does it mean, chant? Learn to relate with everything and everyone in a loving way, because everything exists in connection to Krishna. That's a very integral, comprehensive process. Because if not, we are kind of isolating things. Okay, I'm chanting, and then comes everything else apart from my chanting. But ideally, chanting should be like a lifestyle, something that happens. Again, chanting is related to everyone. That happens. That's why Mahaprabhu said, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Always chant the name of Krishna. Sometimes we can say, well, but how can I always chant the name? Literally, always. Well, we are always relating to something and someone. And learning to do that is chanting, developing your relationship with Krishna and everyone else. So again, all this for me is radical personalism, as you can imagine, and you can infer, because all of this speaks about let's learn to relate to everything, to everyone. Reality is relational. The nature of reality is constant relationality. Tomorrow I will be having, I have a podcast. Anyhow, I don't want to sound like I'm promoting my own stuff, but in my podcast, I invite different devotees, and tomorrow we'll be having a conversation with Srila Krishna Kshetra Maharaj. Yes. And we'll, I mean, it won't be live, it's recorded, and it will be shared probably in a few, like next month. So, but we were sharing some ideas about what could we talk about, and one of the themes he suggested, and I'm 100% in for that, is what he calls dialogical Vaishnavism. So I won't say too much about what we'll talk in tomorrow because I'm spoiling the whole thing. But basically this point of dialogical Vaishnavism, you know, dialogical, of course, comes from dialogue, you know, and conversation. And we were thinking about how dialogue is not just, okay, let's sit and talk, but let's understand how life in itself could be thought as a dialogue, as a constant conversation. So we are always relating to someone else. That's my point. So how we are dialoguing with Krishna, how are we dialoguing with each other, how are we how in conversation with ourselves, how is my relationship with myself, how do I treat myself? That's a whole different conversation also. But recently also in Switzerland, we were talking about, that's a topic we share in the podcast with Mahatma Prabhu. We talk about self-love in bhakti. You know, the importance of learning to relate to ourselves in a healthy way. Because how many times in the name of humility or in the name of surrender, without bad intention, but we end up treating ourselves pretty poorly. You know, and sometimes we end up saying, telling things to ourselves that we will never dare to tell anyone else. But to ourselves, anything and everything goes. and we were laughing, but not to, so we shouldn't have to cry with Mahatma Prabhu telling this idea that, I mean, who wants to join a movement when you end up feeling bad about yourself? Yeah, that doesn't sound like a very charming prospect. No, join us. No? What's the fruit of that? You will feel terrible about yourself. It's like, no, thank you. Right? So again, that's a form of impersonalism. I'm not treating myself as a person, as all that I can be, as a wonderful soul. And I will say something that maybe in the beginning will sound a little heretic, but I will clarify quickly so you don't label me as such, hopefully. But how do I treat myself as the wonderful soul that I am? And you're like, Maharaj, that's arrogant. How can you say that you're a wonderful soul? You are supposed to say that you are crap, right? That's humility. I'm being a little bit cynical, sorry. I just came from Italy, and they have, and from Rome in particular, they have lots of cynicism there. So I got some scars from there. But I'm just quoting Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So I'm supported by Bhagavan. He says, chapter 2, verse 29, giving you the quotation in case you don't trust me. And Krishna is referring to the soul. He uses the word Ascharyabhat. Three times. Ascharyabhat means, Prabhupada translates it as amazing. So he says the soul is amazing. Three times. And we are souls, right? At least that's what who we are actually. Maybe we don't feel as such, but that's who we are, soul. So Krishna is telling each of you, dear souls, you are amazing, amazing, amazing. We cannot argue with that. I cannot tell Krishna, you know what? I have a list of arguments to defeat you. And so we can sit for a debate and I will show you how I'm not amazing. You're wrong, Bhagavan. That's not humility, right?
It's called ego.
Exactly. So Krishna is referring to our real ego or real identity, the soul, and saying, that what you are is amazing. So there is place for saying, I am amazing, but very quickly also I will say, but I am not my own creation. So I have no reasons to become proud because I'm not the soul that I made myself. So I cannot say, I am wonderful, what I did. No, I happen to be a soul, which happens to be amazing. And if properly appreciated, that's humbling instead of promoting arrogance. No? So again, probably we are not accustomed to thinking that way, but I remember with Mahatma Prabhu and other devotees were exploring shastrically approved ways of developing a healthy sense of self-care and self-love based on what Krishna is saying. Again, you are amazing. You are amazing. So there's place to embrace that amazingness in a humbling way. And of course, it's not that, okay, I'm amazing, but only me, I'm amazing. No, you are not amazing. I am amazing. Three times. Krishna said that in the Gita. Krishna spoke about Gita only to me. Only that verse to me. Now the other verse who are more demanding, all of them are for you. 699 verses all for you. I just stay with this one who was specially for me. No. The very moment we say, oh, how beautiful Krishna is saying this about the soul, amazing. Immediately, again, the echo will come and the wind will tell you, but everyone else as well. So you have to treat each other, bearing that in mind. Even if we are behaving in not so amazing ways sometimes, that means to be a conditioned soul. I think we have to be generous with one another and learn to see beyond that and see behind all that, let's say, pile of dust, there is a wonderful soul, always. So we have to always keep that in mind because sometimes we can end up over-labeling one another because of things we have done which are not the most glorious and forgetting that still there is an amazing soul there. And we should leave the door open for a second chance, no? And a third chance and all the chances we need to have that Krishna is giving us. Krishna is a merciful God. Mahaprabhu is Mahavadanya, the most merciful. So this is what I was mentioning in connection to tomorrow's talk with Krishna Kshetra Maharaj. We'll be talking about dialogue and the importance of dialogue as being personalists, no? As being willing to show up to one another, to open our hearts, and to listen to each other. That's a way of treating you as a person. Because if I say, okay, let's have a conversation, but I'm not open to really listen to you, I'm just waiting for you to stop talking and I give you my conclusion, I'm not valuing your opinion, your thoughts, and you're validating your existence as a person. So that's impersonal. Again, there's this quote from a Christian theologian, Paul Tillich. He will say, the first duty of love is to listen. It's a nice one. I like it a lot. The first duty of love is to listen. If I love you or if I want to love you, I have to be willing to listen to you. That's you read my mind. I was just going there. No? When we have all this Angas of Bhakti, it begins with Shravan. And Shravan doesn't only mean go to the Bhagavatam class and listen to the... Also...
Means I put aside my false ego, I surrender, I'm ready to listen because I understand I don't know everything. That's Shravana.
So the willingness to hear, to listen, to hope, the humility, as you say, to I don't know everything, so I cannot judge you. I cannot anticipate. Oh, you are this. You are no. I will listen. I will listen, and I'm open to be surprised and to change my mind. No, that sounds simple, but the willingness to change, the ongoing willingness to change, that's a daily discipline. No, to cultivate, I'm open to change because listening to someone else entails the possibility of being changed by the other person. If I open myself to listen to you, probably what I receive from you will change me, will affect me. And sometimes we are not open for that. So it's important to have that openness. At least, of course, if we are in a circle of trust, no? I'm not saying just open yourself absolutely and be vulnerable to anyone and everyone. That may result in abuse even sometimes. But it's important that we create a culture of listening.
Regularly.
What, sorry?
Well, to open up yourself, you come in as a very humble new bhakta, and then...
Okay. Okay. Thanks for the... I mean, not only Niskun, I can tell I can speak for other traditions, but yeah, it happens everywhere. It's part of human nature, and we need to... I remember it was last year, I met with a friend of mine, also her inspired mentor. He's a Christian Franciscan author, Father Richard Rohr. And we were talking with him, and I was sharing with him some of, as you were telling me, okay, in our tradition, this happens, we have this problem, we have this. And he will say, well, in our tradition, we also have exactly those same things. We have our version of that in this form. And then he came with his own, and also we have this. And I say, we have also that version of that. It takes this form in my tradition. So at the end of the day, we were like, well, it seems that, this part of life, it's part of human nature. It's part of the developmental stages in spirituality. So, yes, please.
I have to go and dress the babies.
Of course. I don't want to get in the way of that, please. Thanks for coming.
I'll come back tomorrow. You're a very nice speaker.
Thanks for coming. That's 2-3 minutes that we open if you have also questions and comments. I'd like also to hear you now that I'm talking about listening. But as a conclusion, radical personalism on the book in itself, I talk about all the things, and also it's kind of an assessment of the current, in my view, my limited view, but what I can see, how I see the current situation of the Vaishnav community at large. I've had the chance of knowing different Gaudiya Vaishnav groups, and what do I feel that needs to be addressed and changed and healed, and also appreciated, of course. But I begin my book, and it sounds a little powerful, and some people was like, in my introduction to the book, I make a list of 10 points why not to remain a devotee. Not because I'm promoting that you leave that, but things that nowadays we can find in the community that make people feel, I don't want to be this. I don't want to stay here. So we recognize them and work on them. And of course, then comes the other 10 points, why to stay as a devotee. And the first point is because the other 10 points are not about the essence of our tradition, but it's about how we are misrepresenting the tradition. But we need to address the misrepresentations. No? So in one way, I will say that the book is a constructive criticism to the condition of the community as I see it. And for me, I take the license to criticize my own tradition because I love my tradition. Like if I love someone, I will dare to criticize you. As I hope that you will criticize me. If there's confidence and trust and openness, in love there is also healthy criticism. No? So the book in one way is a healthy critique of those things that I personally feel. And fortunately, many people then told me, okay, you not only personally feel that, we also personally feel that. So it's kind of trying to get to the zeitgeist or the climate of the times and what needs to be addressed, so we can continue to practice and represent Krishna consciousness in a relevant way, in a relatable way. You know, yesterday I was in Rome. We were celebrating with some other devotees from another Gaudiya Vaishnav mission, so to say. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day. It was yesterday, and we were talking how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very concerned in his time, how to become aware of, okay, what's the pulse of the time? What people are thinking, feeling, how to convey Krishna consciousness to the West, how to be like sensitive to modernity at the time, how to interact with the current time, how to keep the essence of the tradition, but also make it relevant, relatable for the times. So we're praising Bhaktivinoda Thakur for having done that, what, like 150 years ago. But also we're saying, okay, but it's not that because he did that, we don't need to do that ourselves now. It's not just Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. So now he did that job, we don't need to do it. We can just relax and enjoy the fruits of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, Bhaktivinoda Thakur did that 150 years ago. The world changed quite a little bit in 150 years. No, a lot. No? So what will Bhaktivinoda Thakur be doing or saying? And of course, we will say, well, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur then gave the next step in adjusting that. Yes. Srila Prabhupada continued. Yes. But the world keeps changing and moving. And we also keep changing and moving as practitioners. So, and Krishna keeps changing in the sense of he becomes more beautiful, as I was saying before. He keeps evolving. Everything keeps evolving. So how to keep the pace of that unfolding? And of course, that's up to all of us to think and ask and reply to this question. How we can keep Krishna consciousness alive, relevant, relatable, realistic, so we can be devotees for the right reasons, so to say. No, like stay for the right reasons, not stay just out of I don't have anywhere else to do, but everywhere else to go, but just I want to continue doing that and grow and deeply. So that's why, yeah, that's one of the main intentions, as I mentioned in my book, what I wrote, Radical Person Listen. Like, why to stay? Because I see many devotees leaving Krishna consciousness, and that of course breaks my heart. But also I see many devotees staying for the wrong reasons. And that probably breaks my heart even more. So how to stay as a devotee and stay not just fixed, but stay growing for the right reasons. Now, there are so many right reasons. So that's part of the conversation we are having in that book. And again, it's not only a book, say put in the book, it's an ongoing conversation. In my book, I'm not putting any final word. It's just, okay, well, let's talk about it. And the book is closed, finished. Okay, let's continue talking about it, writing our each one their own book on all the things, so to say, through how we live our lives. That's how you can write your book. You don't need to write the book literally, but living our lives in a certain way, that's the testament we are sharing with the world. So, yeah. Some thoughts. I can continue talking, but also I like to hear and to listen. And if you have questions or comments or thoughts or anything you may like to share,
what
please.
You just said, that is why Srila Prabhupada said, follow in the footsteps, but don't imitate. Mm-hmm. So but what did Bhaktivinoda Thakur did in his time? The right thing. So what we have to do at this time? The right thing. But we shouldn't do exactly the same thing as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. Mm-hmm. Just like Jesus Christ walked on the water, we don't have to do that. But the principle is there.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, Krishna consciousness is ultimately very, very simple. Mm-hmm. If I'm not happy, how can I make somebody else happy?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first duty. And I just had my notes here. Oh, I just heard the same thing. Sachinananda Maharaj a few days ago, he said the same thing. You are part of God. Love yourself.
Okay.
Sachinanda. Love that part, because the false ego, that's not myself. That's the illusionary part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you should be aware. And I liked very much the point that you brought before us, that Krishna is not just on the altar. Srila Prabhupada, again, the perfect acharya, he said a devotee is a gentleman, that means, and yoga itself is connecting with God, so everything is the energy of God. Mm-hmm. We are all part of God, and it's not Mayavadi philosophy, versus different energies, but Krishna is not only an altar. I have to respect all life, that's why we are vegetarian, and especially devotees we differ with, these are the challenges to overcome and to become tolerant and to become more aware of that. So very nice. Thank you very much.
Oh, please. Thank you. Very nice what you share. Of course, all that you share now inspires me to continue sharing because you said so many things. So, yeah, I totally agree.
And because this, what you say, chanting is a lifestyle. Yes, because what is chanting? Chanting is glorifying. Not glorify Krishna only, also glorify every living entity, everything. Glorifying life. Grateful for everything.
The other day I was reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Srila Sanatana Goswami. And I found a line in a purport that I already read before, but like those things that you feel, how I never, how this never impacted me like it's impacting me now. Of course, it happens always. And he says, if in relation to what you mentioned, what we were talking about, like, okay, Krishna in one sense is everywhere, if, and we have to relate to everything considering the divine presence. Srila Sanatana Goswami says, if you learn to relate to a blade of grass for what the blade of grass actually is, you can attain all perfection.
Yeah.
That was a very interesting perspective.
It's a matter of consciousness.
No? If you see the blade of grass in connection to Krishna, it doesn't exist isolated. No? You can just, like Mahaprabhu will look at the blade of grass, Trinada Pisunichaya. No? He's finding guru. In the blade of grass. No, a blade of grass is teaching me, it's alive. It's not just a blade of grass. It's someone inviting me to type of humility. You know? So that's it. And that's, of course, this famous verse, Trinath Visunit, is how to chant the name. No, but that verse speaks so much about how to relate to everything. Right?
Like we know, we have to be grateful for everything because everything is given by Krishna ultimately, indebted. So we have to be grateful. And if your consciousness develops, then even one take of breath can stimulate the feeling of, wow, I'm so grateful.
Yeah,
I don't have to gain or, you know, anything nice for someone, but just one grasp of breath is enough to make you grateful.
Because Krishna is in that breath also. That's why his name sometimes Prananath or Praneshwar. Because he's there in the pran, no? When we reach that point of Krishna, I mean, he's the lord of my breathing, so to say. No, I'm not even breathing anymore, I'm sighing. that's an important point. This most important instruction by Mahaprabhu, the third verse of Sikshastakam, that Krishnadas Karaj Goswami say, if you want to attain prem by chanting, you have to follow this verse. If you don't embrace this verse, you can chant for millions of lifetimes and love is not coming. And this verse is all about relating to everyone, no? The humility, the tolerance, the compassion, the forgiveness, the respect. It's not so much, okay, I will apply all that when I'm chanting in my room, my japa. Also, but it's relatively easy to be there sitting. Okay, I don't have anyone else that is challenging me. I will be humble and tolerant. And I have my incense and my nice cushion and my nice pictures and I'm proper chanting in the back. I will offer respects to everyone, but it's nobody in one sense. No? So in one sense, big part of that verse applies when I'm waking up from my bhajan, from my chanting and starting to relate, as you mentioned, especially with those that I may have some challenge. Though they are an invitation to embrace this verse in a deeper way, in a healthy way again, because also, yes, sir.
That's what you mentioned a while ago in a lecture, that for Krishna's devotee, the blessings and the trials, they're both for the benefit of the devotee. Very nice.
You take notes of everyone's class. I can see it. You have great, good memory. We have to be careful what we say because he's taking note of everything. That's good. You keep note of if we say something, he will say Maharaj.
So in one sense, you can, how you say it? See one's chanting in one's behavior.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. No? How you relate to others is showing me how you, the quality of your chanting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Because if, yeah, again, my relationships with others are dysfunctional, evasive, superficial, what to speak of violent or stuff like that, that speaks about your inner life, your relationship with God. You cannot just say, Krishna, I love you, and hate everyone else. Krishna says, you don't love me at all. That's not me. That's your Krishna, your imaginary Krishna, but that's not Krishna.
That's like chanting in a Kanishka state. You chant only with Krishna, and all the rest is not.
And again, we are not condemning that. No. We have to begin somewhere. And Krishna is very generous, but we shouldn't mistake that to be the goal. Again, it begins with, okay, Krishna. Like Krishna says in the Gita, Chatur Vidhava Jantema, people approach me, Artha Jignyasura, Artati, some are afflicted, someone wealth, somewhat knowledge. And you say, I welcome all of them. We have to begin somewhere. But that doesn't mean that's the ideal approach we want to have, the ideal relationships. So in the same way, we may begin chanting in a very, from a very narrow-minded place, sometimes from a very immature place with lots of, I don't know, fundamentalism, tribal thinking, cognitive rigidity. All that means to be a Kanishta Bhakta, which sounds pretty embarrassing. But in its own way, it's also glorious. No? I mean, if you're a Kanishta Bhakta, means you're already on the path of Bhakti. So, gold, Haribo. That doesn't mean that's the goal of Bhakti. But like when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we were talking the other day, if you study Madhurya Kadambini, he describes all the stages in Bhakti. When he describes an Artha Nivritti, Bhajana Kriya, or devotional activities, he first speaks about Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, which means unstable bhakti, up and down bhakti, before reaching nishta, before reaching stability. And he gives six symptoms of Anishtita Bhajana Kriya. We won't go now in detail, it's too much. Utsahamayi Ganatarala Bhudavikalpa. And it's like initial enthusiasm, then you lose your enthusiasm, struggle with the senses, with different desires, you have difficulty in keeping your vows, you have a tendency to enjoy the byproducts that come by bhakti. And anyhow, all of them may sound embarrassing. I'm like, oh, no. Sometimes I joke with devotees, okay, symptom number one, raise your hand, those who know what I'm talking about. And it's like universal consensus. Number three, we are all in. And I mentioned, yeah, they sound pretty embarrassing, but at the same time, all of those symptoms confirm that you are on the path of bhakti. You follow my point? In their own way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur includes them in the description to say, this is supposed to happen at certain stage of your journey. It's not bad. In one sense, it's not glorious and it's not the goal, but it has to happen in one part of your journey. And that's confirming that you are on the journey. So in one sense, it's glorious. In one sense, you should be celebrating that, not eternally, but in one sense, again, not in a complacent way, like an excuse to remain there forever, but also not to get overtly discouraged, like I have this and I must be wrong. No, you're not wrong, probably. That's what's supposed to be happening at the stage you're in. No? I'm just making that point because sometimes we're pretty hard on whether Kanishta, whether ourselves with our own struggles. And sometimes, again, as we were talking with Mahatma Prabhu in our podcast, he was saying that, like, oh, you're feeling this is, of course, because that's what you are supposed to be feeling in this stage. That's normal. Sometimes we are not so much okay with being with normal things. So, but yeah, eventually we need to grow beyond that. But I would say to grow beyond that also, we need first to accept the stages that we need to grow, that we need to outgrow, you say in English? Okay. Because if I don't accept that first, before reaching nishta, I have to go through these ups and downs, if I'm in denial of that, resisting that, I will get stuck there. It will be downward spiral. So unless and until I accept that, and this is supposed to happen, I'm there. Mm. Once I accept that, paradoxically, I can change that.
That's called paradoxical theory of change.
Carl Rogers? No.
Could be. It comes from Gestalt psychology.
Okay, okay.
It says that in order to change something, you first have to accept it.
Yeah.
There is no way.
Yeah. There's a famous quote by Carl Rogers that says that paradoxically, you can only change something with you, but first accepting it. So
I wanted to say that, to continue what you mentioned, Satchananda Maharaj. And last week when the festival started, when I met Maharaj, the first thing he said to me, he quoted a verse from Krishna Bhajanamrita. It's from
Narahari Sarkar.
And so the last word says, if I, with your permission,
please.
He says, may I have affection
for
those who have surrendered to the Lord. May I have affection for those engaged in worshiping the Lord. And may I have affection for my Atma, for which can also mean the body and mind, not just the soul. Mm-hmm. So that I will develop devotion to Krishna. I mean, I was thinking, like, does that Atma mean body and soul, or body or mind or soul? But it doesn't matter. Because
whatever the case. Great. Yeah, I quoted that exact same verse in the podcast with Mahatma Prabhu, because that's a very specific. And how he concludes, no? Like, may I have affection for my Atma, because by doing so, I will attain perfection in bhakti. Yes, please.
I have a question. I don't know if I can formulate it properly because there's a lot of things going through my mind now. relating to, like, you know, being kind of loving yourself as, you know, your awesome soul. And but then having been in an institution for a long, long, long time, we kind of learn to judge yourself by our function in the institution. So I've always find that it's very easy to hide behind devotional service. You do a lot of service and then you're okay. And then I find now, you know, the body becomes older, that is no longer possible. So there becomes this clash between the needs of the institution, which haven't changed, but the body that can't fulfill those needs anymore and that needs to do more personal bhajan instead. And I find it very difficult then to, you know, you're so used to loving yourself based on what you can offer the institution and how to adjust that.
Yeah. Do you have 10 hours to hear the reply? And that will be too little time. Yeah, that's a very important question. A few words, but thank you for the question. I appreciate the sincerity of your reflection and inquiry. Where to start? Yeah, I like to speak. Sometimes you may have heard this. We are human beings, but many times we identify ourselves more as human doings, right? So depending on what I do, I derive my sense of identity because of what I can do. And in the example you gave, we, on the basis of what the service I can perform for the institution, let's put it that way, I am. No? Without that, I'm not saying it's your case, but sometimes we see people that if they cannot do what they are supposed to do or accustomed to do, they don't have a sense of being. No, their being depends on their doing. And that's not healthy. Because we are not human doings. No? The other day I was talking with a devotee who fell sick for like 10 days. And he's very, very accustomed to doing. And he told me, I went through an existential crisis because I couldn't do anything for 10 days. And I felt like I was losing my identity, my existence, because how I saw myself was on the basis of what I could do. No? And I say, that's offering you the chance of rediscovering yourself in a deeper way, because who you are as who you are. I mean, for example, again, we are an Atma and you are loved by Krishna. Now, that's a big point of conversation. Krishna already loves everyone. We generally don't speak too much about that. We speak so much about you have to love Krishna. and sometimes in that idea, you have to love Krishna comes the suggestion, and only then he will love you. Even if we don't say that, we may process the idea like that. There's, that's a cat?
Yes.
Okay.
He's not in agreement, sorry.
It's okay, I'm fine with cats.
He needs to be
loved. No problem, no problem. So Krishna loves everyone already. So the goal of our life is not to be loved by Krishna. Our goal of our life is to love Krishna. He already loves you. So that's an important point, because if we don't have that in place, we act or serve for years, lifetimes, trying to earn Krishna's love, trying to deserve, trying to be perfect, trying to perform. So Krishna likes me, Krishna loves me, but Krishna really loves you. So it's important to rest in that idea for a moment. You are fully loved and accepted by Bhagavan. And when you understand that, naturally you feel inspired to love him back. No, I'm not trying to love him so he loves me. I'm trying to love him because if not, he will get angry at me. He may chastise me. I may lose my human form of life. That's not the ideal motivation to engage in bhakti. But the idea is Krishna already loves you and everyone. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Krishna is a well-wishing, unconditional friend of every living entity. So we can... It's a whole change of our own identity. Who am I? I'm someone loved by Krishna. No? My sense of identity changed. I don't define myself as who am I? I'm this person performing this role for the institution. I mean, that can be there on some level, but that's secondary. That's secondary. My main identity, yeah, I'm an Atma, spiritual soul, amazing as Krishna says. And I'm someone loved by Krishna. That's a valid way of defining yourself. Who are you? I'm a beloved of God. Wow. That's a good beginning point.
Absolutely.
That's a good point, beginning point. I'm beloved by Krishna. Wow. That sets the stage in a positive light. Right. And regarding institutional affiliation and services we perform there, of course, I have nothing against that. But I will say that also an institution ideally has to serve the interest of the people. No, I mean, because what's an institution? A spiritual institution is formed by people, ultimately. So the people is the important thing. Now, the institution in itself is, without people is nothing. Again, if I overemphasize institution or the people, that's impersonalism. Okay, that's another variety of devotional mayabad. If I place overemphasis on the keeping the whatever bricks together, but people are not breaking apart, that's not healthy. So my point is, we are part of an institution. I always like to make this difference. We don't belong to an institution. We are affiliated with an institution. My opinion, I take.
Bhaktisiddhanta said the same.
Okay.
Institution is a necessary evil.
Yeah.
It's necessary to spread the movement. Mm. We cannot do the. Mm. Not sure Prabhupada can do for that. We cannot do that.
So we can be affiliated to an institution, but when we speak about belonging, we can only belong to another heart, to people. I cannot belong to an institution. I can belong to a heart. And that heart happens to be affiliated in an institution, and naturally, because my heart beats in that way, I ended up in that same institution. But it's all about heart connection. And that has to remain always like that. No? So, and of course, historically, that happens, that institutions begin with certain intention, and in time, we lose sight of the original intention, and we end up placing more and more emphasis on form and whatever, external expansion at the cost of internal expansion, and we all know these things. It happens everywhere. But I will say it's important, going back to the idea of self-love, if I love myself in a healthy way, in a devotional way, I have to take care of my bhajan, of my inner life, and an institution should support that, should empower its members to go deeper in their inner life. And our, again, my opinion, our own identity should not be so much like I'm performing this particular service for the institution, but I'm trying to develop my loving relationship with Krishna. And sometimes it takes certain form in the context of an institution. Sometimes it takes another form. That's secondary in one sense. Important thing is, on a daily basis, how can I increase my Krishna consciousness, to put it briefly. So I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm just, again, it's a long conversation. And also I'm getting to know all of you mostly today. So I can't offer like an ultra specified advice with someone that I'm knowing 1 hour ago. I don't want to, because sometimes that's a big temptation, like to, okay, you can do this, you have to do that, but I don't know you. So I just have to, I can reply in a general way, praying that something may be applicable and relatable. But one last thing is this point that I mentioned first. Not this, especially, I can imagine, I mean, I'm 43, and I'm not that elder, but still already I'm feeling like the body is like starting to say goodbye in installments. So my point is, it's nature. It's a perfect arrangement for us to really be more and more situated for who we are, even when we cannot do externally what we were used to do for decades. We should not feel useless, and we should not allow anyone to make us feel useless. But actually, we should feel, okay, Krishna's inviting me to serve and relate him from a deeper place. All the external functions are collapsing, let's put it that way. So everything becomes more and more like thickened and concentrated. I can make a more concentrated offering internally in my heart, no? And transition to my next chapter of the journey in the most internal, profound way. So, and that's beautiful and that's glorious, no? We shouldn't feel I'm useless, I'm not doing what I was supposed to do or I did for decades. No need to go in nostalgia or things like that. But I know it's not easy, but it's not impossible either. Yeah. You want to share something, sir?
I had one question. Maybe I should read first your books, but you were mentioning constructive criticism.
Yes.
So I was wondering, do you have any practical tips to put that in practice?
Okay, I'll share something from my book. I mentioned, I mean, hopefully it doesn't sound too narcissistic. I will quote from my own book.
Yeah. Well, lately that was a topic, you know, there was some...
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a fine line.
About this and that and why.
Something...
Constructive criticism.
Okay, hopefully this helps. It's a few steps that I personally feel it's practical and it's challenging. You have to really, you see how much of a constructive intention you have when you criticize by going through this. So let's say we are in any given situation, and with Purushottam, we are doing Govardhan Dandava Parikram like we did last year. And he happens to do something that I don't like. We were doing it together and somehow he started to go faster than me, and he left me alone. No, he didn't do that actually. I'm just creating a hypothesis. No?
Very slow. Your marriage is way
up. Much faster. Anyhow. So I feel like, okay, I would like to tell him something.
Yeah.
So the first thing, of course, that is for it to be constructive criticism is what I want to tell him is, does it actually have to do with something he did, or it's just my
interpretation,
my own projection, no, my own thing being like thrown into him, no, like the Vedas say, Atmavan Manjate Jagat. No, whatever you have in your own mind, you see the world through those lenses. So first, I need to say, okay, is his thing or is my thing thrown onto him? No? And sometimes we need to stop and reflect for a while before not only saying something, before passing to the next stage. And probably the next stage is if you say, no, that's something that he objectively did. And I like to say it. So maybe the next question is, okay, what's my intention in saying that? Why? Why I'm saying that to him? What's my intention? Do I have an intention of not only of me expressing what I want, but also do I want the best for him?
And for everybody.
No? Constructive criticism. There is a constructive intention, well-being, again, for him, but also for me, because if I'm expressing genuine compassion or care, it has to be something that is equally directed to all. No? Yes. It's not like, okay, I'm compassionate with him in a way that is non-compassionate for the immediate environment, or I'm compassionate with him in a way that is toxic, unhealthy for me, unhealthy for me. That's not compassion. Mm-hmm. It has to be comprehensive. So then that's the second stage. No? First was his thing or my thing, actually. Second, which is my intention in sharing that? No? For him, for me, for the environment. Mm-hmm. And third, just being very few, three steps. Third could be, okay, I'm telling that to him, whatever I need to share, constructive criticism, but then I will commit myself to accompany him to change whatever he needs to change. No, like I'm telling you, okay, I think Purushottam, you did this, and I think it may be better if you can work and do this in this other way, but I'm here with you to accompany you in the process. Now you have to do your thing, but you have my support in this. Now, so it's not like I'm telling you have to change this, so good luck, and I'm leave. No, and I leave that the person with. No? So I think that's also helps to create real constructive criticism. I'm committing myself on accompanying the other person and giving support on the journey.
Mm. Could I give a practical example?
If you could give.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have something in mind.
Okay.
Which is, there's one Mataji.
Don't give names.
No. I don't give names. No.
I'm just joking.
We will guess.
That's what I say. It makes it more interesting, right?
I saw it, you will agree. There's one Pujari here, one Mataji Pujari. Very nice.
He's becoming more specific.
Very nice person. But all of a sudden, I see her already two times walking around in a hot pants. You know, the hot pants is like my underwear. On the ground.
Mm-hmm.
While they are brahmacharis, while we have this vow of celibacy, I don't think it's appropriate. How could I, you know, constructively criticize that mother? Mm. Or help her. I want to help her, but the other side, the other end, I think, well, I don't want to associate it closely. I don't want to bring up that particular thing, you know. I saw your cellulitis. how do you deal with that in a constructive way?
Okay, apart from what I say, something that I always like to mention to myself to begin with is, yeah, whatever we will say, again.
I hear you speaking your points. Mm-hmm. I consider these points. Mm-hmm. I have only the best intentions. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hurt her. Mm-hmm. I don't want to offend her. Mm-hmm. But in the interest of the community, I think this is not good.
Yeah, I get your point, and I think there is place to have a conversation about it with that person, because we need to be able to have, we were talking before about dialogue, conversation, listening to each other.
Or should I leave it to the Matajis, who's responsible for devotee care? Shouldn't I interrupt as a male?
I don't know further details of the situation or your connection with that person or how much, I mean, both cases could work. I don't know. Some cases may work if you know the person, if you feel you as an elder approaching her may have a good effect on that. You can try. No. Or if you feel someone in the Vaishnavi department, so to say, maybe more. Please, no problem. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks for coming. But yeah, somehow or other, I think it's important that whomever approaches the person does it with understanding, in the sense of maybe the other person doesn't know, maybe that not with some, I don't know. I know the person, and I'm not trying to get the name or anything. But my point is also don't approach the other person with assumptions already, you know, about why the person is doing that. And because sometimes I'm not saying you or this situation, but sometimes we see something, but we already get a list of assumptions of why the person is doing that. So we approach the person already having reached a conclusion. And maybe the other person will feel that. No, like, we are not coming to talk and listen to me, but there's already like a conclusion established. So there's no conversation here. So at least give the person, as they say, the benefit of the doubt. Let's approach the person, present the situation, and of course, as respectfully as possible, and inviting the person for dialogue and presenting your points in a respectful way. I mean, it makes sense what you are sharing, so there should be a space for conversation, basically. Like with that, with any other thing, actually, you know, anything, we should be able to talk about anything. No,
the only way to solve problems is communication.
Yes, yes. So as basic as that sounds, and in my brief experience, I've seen that, like, whatever needs to be solved and healed and understood, we have to be able to sit and to really listen to each other, not just come again with our own bag of assumptions and just like throw our assumptions onto the other person, and the other person is doing the same. There's no dialogue there. It's just a simultaneous monologue and nobody's listening to each other. No, that's not a bada. No, that's not the type of sattvic conversation. It's jalpa or bitanda, where everyone is just shouting at each other, wanting to defeat each other, waiting for their turn to say their thing. As long as we create this culture of dialogue and listening and conversation and receiving each other, hopefully we can talk about anything and everything, because we need to talk about many things. Sometimes the problem is when we don't even feel that some things can be talked about, no? So we have to really create this safe space that we can, anything can be brought to the table and we can talk. As long as we do it from this constructive place, there should be no harm. On the contrary, it's a way of showing affection to each other and trust and confidence. So that's what I can say so far. I wish you the best in that particular situation, whether it's you or someone else talking. But yeah, of course, it's part of community life. I mean, if someone is living with other people, we have to consider each other and be sensitive to each other. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. I think this is a show how important this, I mean, needed these kind of discussions are, to be able to ask questions. I don't know, many things that you said resonated deeply and touched me. So I have quite some questions, and I don't know if any of them is short, but if it's okay, I can maybe try with one.
We'll try,
next days. I really appreciated you speaking about how when, you know, we step on the path of going towards Madhyama Adhikari and trying to see everything in connection to Krishna, and especially being, one thing you mentioned, open to change. So we're trying to see where are some signs or direct messages that, you know, there's a way that we need to change in what we do, how we do things. at the same time, you're speaking about, you know, radical personalism and unveiling our personality, basically, our self.
Yes.
And in that, we are actually, you know, defending also, if I understood you. I don't know still the way you understand that, and I would love to hear more. But if you can say something about this dynamic of openness to change and at the same time, you know, standing in our personality with which we would like to offer our service and develop our relationship with Krishna. So
yeah, I mean, and you tell me if I understood the question correctly, but for me those two do not go against each other, because developing my personality in service of Krishna entails the willingness to change. So of course, when we say personality, we could say, okay, my present personality is my acquired nature in this lifetime. And one could say, once I have the Atman, the soul, and I have on this side my human personality with certain psychology, and that can be seen as, that's relative, that's temporary, that's not who I am. So there's no need to work on that, but just to activate the soul, so to say. But I will argue quite strongly that that's not necessarily the case to make that type of divide. Because in bhakti, even if in this body you have certain personality, you can spiritualize that personality by bhakti and that personality, spiritualized personality, will be your personality in eternity, basically. So that's the nature of bhakti. Bhakti comes and spiritualizes everything. So we can develop our personality in the sense of becoming, again, a healthy human being, let's put it that way, in the service of Krishna. No? It's not that it's a separate project. Sometimes about the thing, okay, I have my spiritual life and I have my material life, and my material life entails, I don't know, psychological health, well-being, emotional balance. But that's my material life. My spiritual life is this. And I said, well, you are creating that dichotomy, that divide. We don't necessarily need to do that. We can integrate everything. So we can, like yesterday, I was talking with a devotee in Italy, and he told me, Maharaj, he was kind of, okay, he's about to confess me. Confession time with the Swami, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. So it's like, okay, what will come here? Maharaj, yes. I go to the gym. And I was like, come on. Like, I'm in Maya, Maharaj. Lost case. And not only that, Maharaj, I have something else. And it was like, wow. At that point, I was already like, yes, tell me. Sometimes I play tennis. And I was like, whoosh. Lost case. You're losing your form of life right now. And I tried to tell him, like, don't go neurotic. I mean, that's your, you can do all that in a healthy way. You know, that can be something to keep your body healthy. That can be part of your recreation. No, I mean, for his life, for his life dynamics, that's normal. That's not like a sin. No, I wouldn't see that like you're absolutely deviating from the path and that's take you to forget Krishna. Absolutely. No. He tells me, no, doing that actually engages my body and keeps my mind more balanced, and then I can engage in sin. So all that is connected to bhakti. You are keeping your body health fit to engage in bhakti. So there is a connection. You are recreating yourself. That's part of that. Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Gita, yukta ara viharasya yukta chastasya karmasya. You have to sleep in a balanced way, which means you have to sleep as much as you need to sleep. No. Balanced way doesn't mean a fixed number for every single person. No. So what's balanced sleep for you? What's good sleep that you feel that during the day I'm not dysfunctional because of lack of sleep? Find your number and honor that. No, it's not like I'm being in tamas or whatever. No, you need tamas to sleep. So tamas is useful not to go crazy. Because if you don't sleep, you go crazy. So tamas is not a bad thing. It's how we use every energy. So, and Krishna said, you have to be balanced in your eating, in your sleeping, in your recreation, he says. No? So, yes, he has some note from some days ago.
Yes, yeah, some notes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daily schedule.
Okay, fasten your seatbelt now.
And what did he do? Then, after, then walking fast for physical exercise.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So I will send a message to this about no more gym, no more tennis. But you say before, what do you say? What's the first thing you say today?
Good morning.
We should not imitate, we should follow the footsteps.
Yes.
No? So for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's his exercise and recreation. Not like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur himself, he comments on that verse of the Gita. Recreation for the yogi. He said the recreation for the yogi is, no, he's talking about the yogi living in a cave, meditating. And he said the recreation for the yogi is to wake up from sitting and walk a little bit and return to the cave. That's it. And for some people, that's not enough, right? For some devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. Again, we have to find our own level of recreation in which that's not becoming a distraction from our ideal, but actually is creating enough decompression to continue practicing from a balanced way, no? So I will say that, we have to develop our individuality, our personality. There is this nice book, maybe you read it, if not recommended, by Purnachandra Swami, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he already passed, Unspoken Obstacles to the Path of Bhakti. Oh, very interesting. I read it like, I don't know.
25 years
ago. Yeah, I read it not so 25 years ago, but 15 years ago. And at one point he's talking with the devotee and he's asking her, so which service you would like to offer to Krishna? And she started to cry. So he asked, like, why you're crying? Because nobody asked me that in 20 years. I was only always told what to do. No, we need that, you have to do that. I was not basically like, my individuality was not considered, something like that. No? So we have to learn to validate that. No? Okay, I have an individuality, I have Krishna in the Bhagavatam, this beautiful verse that Krishna tells to Uddhava, and it's kind of repeated verbatim in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Krishna says, offer to me what I like the most, Krishna says, or offer to me what you like the most. Mm. No. So it's not just offer me what I like. Mm-hmm. Krishna is also asking, what do you like? Mm-hmm. Not only what do you like to offer me, but what do you like? Mm-hmm. No. In some stage of the practice, the devotee, I don't know, likes pizza a lot. No? He has Italian samskaras. And he really likes pizza. So Krishna will say, offer pizza to me. No, because you like that a lot. So you will be able to attach some emotional connection to the offering. So again, it may not be the ultimate degree of self-dedication, but it's valid and it's interesting. So we should see where we are in the practice. Again, not trying to be more than what we are, because that will be, again, imitation. No, I cannot. Sometimes I see devotees who are very sincere, but sometimes they over-idealize, like they read the life of Raghunath Das Goswami or something, and they're like, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And it won't work. I mean, you will end up in the madhouse or something. I'll try to sleep this, to eat this, to chant this, and imitation again. No? Or sometimes you over-idealize what you should be feeling. Okay, I'm chanting, but the tears and the trembling and the ecstasy is not coming. Not because you are not in Bhava Bhakti yet. Something like that, like normalize where you are. And from that stage, of course, we can change. So yeah, I think it's healthy to integrate our different layers of physical, mental, emotional in the service of spirit, developing our individuality, so we can give Krishna more diversified offering. More specific offering, it will be tasty for him. Developing our own criterion, developing our own way of thinking. Again, Purnachandra Swami says that in his book. He says, there are some people who want to merge into Brahman, and we call that impersonalism. He said, there are other people who want to merge in a crowd and lose their own opinion and way of thinking and voice. That's another variety of sayujya, or merging. No? So we should keep develop our voice, our individuality, our personality in service. And ideally, yeah, the community should always foster that. No? We want to have, no? Prabhupada was saying, independently thoughtful people. Mm-hmm. No? That's a powerful line. Dependence is not a bad word altogether. No, we emphasize dependence, and that's great, but not at the sake of all forms of independence. When you have been dependent enough, you can be independent. We can say it that way. So, I don't know if that helps.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I really, it really settled the answer that you mentioned, especially Purnachandra Maharaj's book, the question that he asked. I just had one little comment. When you mentioned about what community, you know, should offer and the mood that it should create, I completely agree with you. And definitely I see that many times we're missing that. the same time, I also notice that when we start to expect, you know, the community to offer certain things or to be in a certain way, actually what happens is just our own frustration might grow instead of actually being settled in our own, you know, whatever we can offer for the good of the community, whatever service, and just stay there from that perspective. We can see maybe what we're missing, but rather than focusing on this should, it's easier for us, actually more healthy for us also, to keep this relationship healthy, you know, to just see, okay, I might miss that, but maybe I'll have to fulfill it somewhere else, but still I can have a healthy relationship with the community. I think it's crucial in my experience.
Totally agree. We cannot, we shouldn't be just expecting anything and everything coming from one particular place, and and if not, I'm frustrated, I have to leave, this is not correct, something is wrong here. Not necessarily. Maybe what the community is not able to offer is inviting me to do that, offering myself also, right?
If I can,
of course, without forcing. But sometimes we are invited to, if we see a necessity of something, what probably Krishna is inspiring us to, for us to fulfill that necessity as much as we can. Or if we can fulfill that in some other place, it's fine. No, it's okay. Like I sometimes tell devotees, okay, someone, a devotee may have some mental health issue. And you can say, oh, my community is not fulfilling that need. It doesn't have to. You may need to go to a psychologist, to give an example. And it's not that, oh, the community is failing because of that. No, no. You just need to find some complementary contribution to that. No, it's like, I don't know, similar pattern. Someone has a guru and expects the guru to be an expert in all fields of knowledge, like to be a proper, I don't know, marriage counselor and financial advisor and who knows what, no, what car to buy. And no, that's not the role of the guru. So you may need to go to someone else to advise, give advice on that, but you have to have a clear idea of, okay, what can I expect in this direction and how I can, as you say, give back, because if not, it's just me demanding, expecting, taking, and okay, we are almost 1 hour 40 minutes, so I don't want to over, it's first day, so I don't want to scare you on the on day one. So we also, we may need time, including me, just to think and process what we have shared, because as I always like to say, I say all these things, but then I have to walk my talk. No, I have to live what I'm saying and to integrate. So it's also my own process. And hopefully all of us reflecting together. And if you have time, of course, welcome to come these days. We'll be sharing some other themes connected to radical personalism, which again, is all themes connected to what we are doing, supposed to do here as devotees and our life and our practice. So thank you so much for your time, for your questions, for your presence, for your listening. I hope to see you these days. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Guru Parampara ki jai. Sadhu Sangha ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. God Praman.
Hari 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 Bol.
Panchakalpa Tarubhya.
Sadhu Pasindhu ki vacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo.
Thank you very much. No, thank you so much.